towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So you know me, it's a pop quiz again today. What did we talk about on the first day? You remember? Okay, you're like my students. They blurt out one word. It's like ancestors.
What we bring into this, the personality that we bring into this world through either our ancestors or our essence.
Okay, so we have those streams that come through, right?
And we're not necessarily what we're ancestrally made up of, or what divinely made up of, the real soul stuff.
Yeah, so we're not restricted by just what we brought in through our ancestors or our heritage, but we also have this divine heritage or parentage that we can manifest. Tuning to it.
Unlimited potential.
Well, from Superman, that's pretty great. And for those that will be listening to the tape later, our friend Jem, and that's G-A-M, G-E-M, right? Did I say A? I know, I can't spell. What happened? You know, it's like, it just happens. He's a gem, and he has his Superman shirt on. Unlimited potential. And that it's good to identify those characteristics and kind of label them. You know, we've heard the word throughout the camp, a kind of deconstruction in a way, sort of looking at those qualities that come from our mother or maternal ancestry and our, you know, paternal father's ancestry, and then all these other things that exist that there's no explanation from where they've come except for the one and only being. So that's what we talked about. And maybe it's a good thing to make those lists. And one can make those lists at all the different levels. Think about the five elements. You know, how am I manifesting my earthly heritage in my body, in my emotions, in the way I think? You know, how is all that, you know, formed through that conditioning or those circumstances? I keep hearing His Holiness the Dalai Lama whisper in my ear, oh, that's so great. But anyway, he's reminding me to say that within the seed of every birth are the causes and conditions for its destruction as well. Which, that sounds maybe pretty fatalistic, but the whole point is it's the nature of impermanence. So even if we think we're stuck in this thing, whatever that thing is, it's just a matter of time. It's going to move. It's going to shift. It's going to evolve. It's going to transform. It's going to teach, right? So within every birth, there are the seeds of its own destruction. Pretty powerful to think about that. So that was the first day, and making those lists and getting very clear about that can help us enhance certain qualities or transform certain qualities. Okay. And then the second day,
body is temple.
Now our heart is the altar.
Yes.
Okay. Chalice waiting for that unlimited potential. Not waiting, but receptive to all of that limitless potential.
Was that the second day? That was, I think that was yesterday and this morning. I know, I think I might have to cheat too and look. Does anyone remember? We were so clear about it yesterday. Sister?
The exact phrase, be the consciousness of God, I believe is the second day.
Well, I think that we were talking about just that, you know, we can have our own innate, you know, consciousness or happiness, even if there is a cause and condition in this life that could create suffering, we still can be connected to our divine inner being.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I keep thinking, and maybe that this in some ways, we actually talked about Jalal and Jamal, and we worked with those breaths, right? Do you remember that? And then Pierre Schaubda did some elaboration of that today. So nice to have the commentary done after the teaching. So great. It's like we're so in sync, you know? We're all are. The Kasa breath, didn't we? So we did Yabatan, Yazahir. And I want to give you a little something to maybe take with you if you feel you need to invoke that wazifa. When I invoke that wazifa and I use it, and I don't just sort of pick them up and use them for just a short period of time. I mean, I will use a wazifa. Typically, I'm assigned, but Paramarshat Hadayat said, give me a, you know, he gave me, I told you, the kasab for my lifelong practice, but he also said, you know, just do it. You know, so that kind of leaves you out there a little bit. It's good to have some reflection. So, but sometimes I think, well, maybe I need to learn the value of this practice. Who knows? Because that was one of the blessings of Pir Vilayat. Don't ever give a practice that you haven't done yourself and know the effect. Which is a good piece of advice for people that maybe have picked up the Physicians of the Heart book and think that they can be their own pharmacist. Be careful. Someone at this camp had heard me say that in the past and thought, oh, Nuria, whatever, and did it. Said, oh, Nuria, whatever. I gave the advice not to assign one's own practices. And the person thought that wasn't important. They had picked up a book. It wasn't Physicians of the Heart. It wasn't made then. It hadn't been printed then. And started self-assigning practices according to what they thought their conditions were or what was needed. And came up to me at the next camp and said, oh my God, you were so right. You can make yourself really physically ill or mentally ill. Don't believe me? Try it.
We were always taught that. It's like going into the medicine cabinet and opening the medicine cabinet and then taking all the medicine.
I guess there's a reason it's called physicians and we're not the physician.
I think it's good to read it, but then I think it's always good. I mean, I think you can treat that academically. I think academically is different than spiritually, a spiritual application, right? And so, but I think that academically one can study, oh, that's very interesting. And maybe, for example, you read something and then you say, oh, I can see that quality in myself, or that would be a quality, I could see the value of that, or I recognize that quality in another person. You know, it helps us develop our wisdom mind, and we talked about beauty and wisdom being synonymous. I think that's a very good way, but I think to self-assign is probably not a good thing. So the Kasa breath, though, is something we worked with, and that Ya Jamal, Ya, you know, the Jalal and the Jamal, and sort of thinking about the queenliness supporting and uplifting and offering graciousness and beauty and tenderness to the kingly part of ourselves, and then the king with his power and might and influence, then upholding and supporting all grace and beauty and protecting it as well. So those two forces. And then, of course, I didn't speak of, but the holding is the Kamal. It's the perfect balance of both. The perfect balance of both. And I feel compelled in this moment to share the value of that practice in a different way. If someone feels stuck, like something in the past is unresolved, you can also, time is very, you know, we talked about things are not as they appear, nor are they otherwise. We talked about that on the second day, right? the two truths. And so there is a way that one can tune in the receptive side to something from the past that needs to be brought into the present on the holding, and use the force of the future on the right, and then what one learns from the future bringing up to the present eternal moment, and then taking that knowledge to the past to transform it. Did you kind of grasp that? Shall we do it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so, you know, just think of something, perhaps something, you know, I guess one could say regret. Is there a regret anywhere, you know, that you'd like to release or transform or activate in the now? Okay. Past is past. Future's future. We only have the eternal now. But things are also in flux. So what we're going to do is we're going to breathe in through the right nostril. We're going to take whatever that regret might be, and we're going to bring it into the present moment, but not just the present moment, the infinite and the eternal. And as we breathe out, we're going to cast ourselves into the future. And with the knowledge of the future and the wisdom of the future, we're going to come back into the eternal moment and inform this regret. And then we're going to breathe out the left and transform. So inform and transform. It's a really beautiful practice. This was given by Pir Vilayat, the elder son of Hazrat Anayat Khan. So maybe it's something injury that you've incurred, or some injury that you dispensed, you know. Maybe there are words that were said, or, you know, and this is really great if there's unresolved issues with a deceased, you know, family member, partner, or whatever. If only I could have. If only I knew then what I know now. Well, you do. So let's do it rhythmically, if you will. Typically, as Anayat Khan gave it, we breathe in 4, we hold 8, we breathe out 4, we breathe in 4, we hold 8, we breathe out 4, okay? Do you mind if I count for us all? Is that okay?
We're going to breathe in left, hold, breathe out right, breathe
in
out,
right, hold, and out left, okay. Right.
So we're bringing in some disappointment or regret from the past.
Well, we could just say the energy of it, you know, too, if you don't want to, if it's painful.
Okay.
I'll give you the instructions.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, no, Mudita, in terms of the technical part.
So now we're getting thought, and once it enters into this mall,
you hold it into this equilibrium in this eternal moment, and then you cast yourself into the future.
Just releasing it.
Yeah, and getting the wisdom from the future, bringing it to the present moment to help inform that situation, and then we release through the left to transform the situation.
Can we turn off the fan?
You having trouble hearing me?
Yes. No, my contacts are dry.
Me too. I always like to sit with the fans behind me.
Anybody know where the switch is?
Yeah.
Right. Thank you. Who do you think?
Thank you.
Holding your right nostril closed, you can do a variety of mudras, you know, whatever's comfortable, you can do that. I typically do something like this or this, just kind of, it helps me center at this point. The other thing, and this is technical, and I always hesitate to give all the technical information, but there is something to it. Typically, when in the inhalation, you're going to breathe up and you're going to concentrate your inner vision. You're going to allow your eyes to actually go up and look here. And if you can you see what I'm doing? My tongue is going on my palate just to the back of my teeth. You can also put your tongue there at the soft palate. It'll help draw the energy up. Okay. Don't get too caught in that. It kind of comes naturally. Your body will make its own mudras that sync up with the practice. So first let's breathe out through both nostrils. One, two, three, four. In left. Hold. Out right. In right. Hold. Out left. In left. Hold. Out right. In right. Hold. Out left. In left. Hold. Out right. In right. Hold. Out left. In left. Hold. Out right. In right. Hold. Out left. In left. Hold. Out right. In right. Hold. Out left. In both. Hold. Out both. 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 And just relax. Natural breath. Again, as we've done in the past few days, let us ride the current of the breath. You know, the breath is like a magic carpet that can take you anywhere. And in this instance, we're sort of going through the various levels, the different rooms in our interior mansion, you might say. First, the body. We enter the sanctuary, we enter the temple, the body. We enter the sanctuary, the heart. And then we see the chalice there. Contained within the chalice is this divine nectar, the nectar of your soul. It's the elixir. the divine qualities, all of them, known or unknown, full potential residing in this chalice that sits on the altar, which is your heart, within the temple, which is our body. As we recited yesterday, Yadul Jalawalikram, the one that is radiant with all splendor, all mastery, the one that is the perfection of all receptive and active qualities. Yadu jala wal ikram. 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 So I'm sharing today from some esoteric papers, and I really went through a round and round with myself about presenting this because these are the papers that are given to the Pure Murshid only to study. But here's the interesting thing. It's repeating a lot of what we heard yesterday. So I realized it's okay, I can give it to you because you're all the manifestation of Pure Murshid, God willing. Our attunement, God willing. Contemplate this. This is from Hazrat-e-Naik Khan, the Gayan. Truth is a divine inheritance found in the depth of every human heart. Truth is a divine inheritance found in the depth of every human heart. And here, I guess we could discuss what is truth, but the fact is being true to oneself is a truth. To know thyself is a truth. And as Pir Shabda said the first day, you know, you're going towards that horizon, and as you reach it, the horizon keeps receding, and our perspective changes, our understanding changes. Our wisdom opens up, our tolerance, our patience, our love, our empathy, our compassion. So you will hear, I love that word, that Fatima was the echo of Muhammad. So this is going to be the echo of yesterday. But now remember that these were the papers given to the Pir Murshid. Spirituality is natural nobleness, and the unfoldment of the innate nobleness is spirituality, a divine inheritance which is hidden in every soul. Does it sound familiar? We heard it yesterday, and then again this morning I shared it. And by the manifestation of this divine heritage, a soul begins to show divine origin. All the striving in the spiritual path is to bring out this nobleness. But one need not strive to bring it out. It comes by itself if one is conscious of that divine heritage. It is that consciousness which brings out that nobleness of spirit. In the terms of the Sufis, this nobleness is called Akhlaq Allah. Akhlaq Allah. The whole from the beginning? Okay, in the terms of Sufis, this nobleness is called Akhlaq Allah, which means the manner of God, a manner which is unlike any other manner known to the world. So, you know, I think they've even had this on t-shirts and things like, what would Jesus do? Right? It's kind of like that, you know? What would Buddha do? What would Jesus do? What would Muhammad do? What would Krishna do? What would, you know? What would Allah do, the One? Manifest in many names and forms. So Murshid goes on and lists those things, all these variations. We heard it this morning. This is, in fact, a different paper, but it's repeating the same lesson. It is the manner of the mother to her child. It is the manner of the father to his son. It is the manner of the man towards his friend. It is the manner of the maiden towards her beloved. It is the manner of the Lord towards his servant. It is the manner of the child towards his mother. It is the manner of the son towards his father. It is the manner of the slave toward the king. And yet, it is above and beyond all manners, known to mankind. And I think about in the prayer Salat, you know, as a loving mother, as a kind father, as an innocent child, as a helpful friend and an inspiring teacher. These are all the ways in which the divine manifests to us. In what may seem as the most ordinary way, but is also the most extraordinary way. The divine manner is humility. It's modesty. It is pride. It is honor. It is kindness. It is graciousness. It is indifference. It is independence. A manner inconceivable to human mentality. A manner which cannot be learned or taught. A manner which springs itself and comes forth as a divine blossom. It is in this manner that there is the fulfillment of man's purpose. And again, you know, this morning I talked about this indifference because I think this term can be misunderstood, and also independence. You know, and Tamam came up and she thanked me for kind of giving a little commentary on that, because she said, you know, I've often struggled with that word indifference, and what does that mean? There is a term in Sanskrit, right? Ali Khadr, you know the word. Not Viagra. Viraja. Yeah, Viraja or Viraga. Yeah. And it's dispassion, but it's not like, oh, I don't care, or it doesn't matter. It's like the ultimate empathy. It's the ultimate container for all of it. But it's not sentimentality. There's a difference between getting caught up in the emotion of it and being able to hold the emotion of it. So being able to have this very broad view that doesn't really take sides but can see all things. They always say that's what the Sufi does. The Sufi looks at things from one's own point of view and that of another. So, but it's this very broad view that lets you take in everything without judgment, with tolerance, with compassion, with empathy. It's not always easy to do. I mean, we're human beings. We get catalyzed by things, but it's a good reminder. And when we do get catalyzed, it's a little friendly reminder that maybe we're off that beam a little bit. We're a little too attached. I know Ollie Cutter loves the third patriarch of Zen, which begins, a great way is not give difficult for those who have no preference. A great way is not difficult for those who have no preference. To pit that which you like against what you dislike is like the difference between heaven and hell.
It says the disease of the mind.
The disease of the mind. Pir Shabda was talking about that in terms of kind of I think he used both words. It was like constructive, you know, thoughts and emotions that become destructive. He was sort of going back and forth with these terminologies. They're all very, very helpful.
It probably touches on this difference where this is in the teaching, you know, the Hinata thesis, like, I love you as much as I've loved anyone before, but I'm indifferent whether I ever see you.
Yeah. So that was a
clinging time.
For the purposes of the recording, I love you like I've never loved anyone else before, and it's also okay if I never see you again.
I always like to remember that it's a wing of indifference attached to the heart.
Yeah, that's so, a very good way of putting it, yeah.
As long as you remember that the heart is there.
Yeah.
Be indifferent because you're still loving.
Absolutely.
It's not cold. It's not cold.
It's very warm and tender.
It's just.
And we can mention the other wing.
Yes, and the other wing is independence.
Also attached to the heart.
That's right. And if you think about it, you know, that's true. You know, I mean, these are our wings.
And when they say you have independence and indifference,
you're free.
Heart can soar.
It can. Only a heart with wings can fly.
Well, as Shabda was saying earlier too, that the that independence, first you have to develop a good ego before you can efface the ego. So that's the independence.
Absolutely.
On the heart.
Yeah. And Ram Dass says,
you have to become someone before you can become no one.
You have to become someone before you become no one. It's true. You have to have some, I mean, here it is. I mean, renouncement isn't anything unless you have something to renounce. Hello? It's easy to say, oh, I renounce that. Well, you never had it. So, right? And independence allows us to move forward in what Murshid said first up here. About that truth. Truth is the divine inheritance found in the depth of every human heart. And sometimes one has to be extremely independent in order to take up that sacred duty, that direction, that task, because others may, just from fear or concern, say, oh, don't go there, don't do that, right? It's love, but it's also fear, mixed with fear, that people may discourage us, and we have to be very independent. Free yourself from all conventions. I love that.
Is that why the word pride is included in there, though, because of this? Something that you do. I'm attached to it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think these words are so interesting because I think, again, you know, I'm always trying to think of it in the context of Indian consciousness, because Murshid was from India, you know, and that sense of pride is also associated with duty and taking up one's task with great care and distinction and a kind of dignity. And I also I'm also reminded of the, you know, the seven limb prayer in Buddhism, which I think I often quote that in this context, because it's like, I rejoice in the virtuous deeds of all, you know, ordinary and special beings. You know, it's like that rejoicing, so that it is a kind of, you know, it's an aspect, it's a facet of nobility, isn't it? But we think of pride in a different kind of way. Oh, they're such a proud person, they need to be brought down a little bit. Allah, 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 Allah. I'm hearing only, are they doing the whole zikr? I thought, aren't they just doing Allah downstairs?
No,
now they're doing talk about this beautiful prayer. Pir Murshid Hazrat Anait Khan talks about this motion. We also did it this morning, and this is not my body, this is the temple of God. Or you could say, this is my body, this is the temple of God. But the truth is that this is the line of negation. So this is not, and it is the temple of God. But Anait Khan talks about this individuated self, which resides at the left of the heart, and the unlimited self, which resides to the right. Really, it's also these two wings in some ways. You could look at it that way. We are moving from limitation to unlimitedness, and when we come back, the knowledge of unlimitedness comes into the, informs the limited self. The same way, from the past we come into the present, we go into the future, that knowledge informs the present and transforms the past. You see how it's all connected? These motions, these lines, this sacred architecture even of the body, look at it, you know, the measurement of man, the five-pointed star, this horizontal line, it's all there, it's all there. So Anait Khan talks about also that this also represents limited self, one's heart, the heart, the feeling realm of the individual, and the unlimited, the soul qualities then inform the heart. You see how it's all connected? It's all connected. All going around. But it's good to know when we're doing zikr what we're doing. Also, this motion of the zikr is the same motion as this is not my body, this is the temple of God. This is not my body, this is the temple of God. And Murshid gave great importance. He said this in some ways is the singular best protection one can give to make this motion. This, you could call it the sign of the cross, but to draw these lines across one's body. And he says for women, and in fact he gives a practice not commonly known, I don't think in some circles, but to see oneself in front of oneself as a mirror image, doing the zikr with oneself, And as you're doing it, you're drawing the cross upon the image of your own body. For women, he says they can do it just simply with their glance, very subtly. So have you ever felt in a place where you didn't feel totally safe, or you felt some energy coming at you that you'd rather not come towards you? This is what you do. I do it any way I can, with my eyes just closed. Sometimes I'll do it with my foot, whatever I need to do, just to kind of make that.
And would you do it the way you would form the zikr movement, with horizontal and vertical?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So even though it's the mirror image, still on the person in front of you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to do this practice.
Yeah, and I think actually those of you that maybe have read, I think Samuel Lewis gave some commentary on this in the performance of Zikr, those papers.
Okay.
Yeah, so you could look at that there. And also in Sacred Symbology, I think Murshid Sam also gave commentary. It's very beautiful to understand these gestures and why we're doing them, I think. It gives meaning to what we do. I've digressed a little bit, but apparently it's to be shared. Because we're also repeating here, in a way, it's a review.
What's happening to the heart as well as the inner heart?
Sorry?
The heart and the material. This is not my heart.
Oh, this is not my heart. This is the altar of God. Yes, that's what it is.
I mean, you know, you do the first part, not the second part.
You could do all of it. You know, and you can even say, this is, you know, I think you'd leave it at that, you know. But I think just simply making that breath, even the line with the breath, is also very good. And some questions come up, I hear them all the time, about, oh, I can't breathe in this nostril and out that nostril. It really doesn't matter. Those of you that work with me, you know that we talk about the elements and the colors of the elements and the breath being actually absorbed through the different centers. It's not just through, we're not concentrating on the nostrils at all. It's through the base of this skull, you know, that the air is coming in here, and then it's penetrating to the center here, and then here, and here. You know, so it's not contingent on, oh, I can't breathe, or I'm stuffed up. You're breathing with everything. Everything's breathing.
Breath
so don't.
Is more than air.
Yes, absolutely.
It's life, it's energy.
Yeah.
Air is just kind of a physical thing that we can feel passing, but
yeah.
You just visualize the breath. It's an energy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Ollie Cotter?
I hope it's not changing the subject, but
it's okay.
The cross, and you mentioned the performance of Zikr, Murshid Sam's painter.
Yes.
Wondering, I have never ever heard anybody talk about that, and it has been so helpful. I just last night or even the night before, with a zikr, I can be thinking of, you know, washing the car and packing and doing 14 other things while my mouth is saying that over and over again. But in the performance of Zikr, the paper Murshid Sam gives a dozen different secondary concentrations.
Right.
While you're doing the zikr, cross and several others. And so, I mean, it's absolutely just a bulwark for me to stay out of the mumbling.
Yeah,
plane,
yeah.
By having the zikr and another visualization at the same time.
Yeah.
And I don't hear anybody really
talk about
so
it. It is very helpful.
I haven't heard anybody explain that, or maybe, you know, offer it to other people. What is the secret paper?
It's not the secret papers. It's in the Gathas when he talks about sacred symbology, but the Naqshbandi teachings. But you know, the one of the beautiful images that I think Murshid Sadi Klotz gave was this idea of, you know, a lot of times we're doing this head thing. Well, it's not that at all. It's really the dipping of the heart, right? And filling it up in this sort of crescent moon, you know. So it's not this thing, you know. Piro Murshid Hidayat always says, you're going to get whiplash if you keep doing this, that you just move in this way, you know, and that you think about, you just, this empty heart's being filled up. and can be emptied again, and then it fills up.
The head is just following the body.
The head is just following the body. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes?
So the Dharvesha said, Sadi said this, and Sadi said, Dharvesha said this, but I've been, this is one of my practices with this, is that the paintbrush is on the end.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah, that's sweet.
And my heart is tarnished.
Oh,
each
yeah.
Each time I do this, the paintbrush wipes a little bit of that rust off that mirror of the soul.
It's beautiful.
And like, it's going to take me a whole life, 100 years, to get it completely clean. And I'm going to keep cleaning.
Polishing.
I think my heart as moving against a grindstone.
Oh.
Secondary concentration of your mouth.
A stone.
Yeah, that's my secondary. It's the, I'm always... Yeah.
Concentrating. Okay. It's very helpful.
I'm always thinking of just my breath doing that, though.
Yeah. Sure, sure, sure. And everyone has their own tool, their own method. It's
Zuleika talked about dipping the heart and filling it like a cup.
Yeah. So it's beautiful. And those of us that have those concentrations really can help the concentration for ourselves, but also we offer that benefit to the whole group. Divine manner. Divine manner. Yeah.
And the concentration. He was one who really focused on that.
Yes, he did.
I need to go back and read it.
Yeah, like, it would be very good. And you know, one of the things that he talked about, because and Pir Shabda talked on, about that, you know, that he was taught one way to do the zikr, and then Imam Bilal had mentioned another way. But Pir Vilayat made a very clear distinction on the out-breath versus the in-breath.
You know, zikrs, negative
the positive zikrs and the negative zikrs. You already began with the negative zikr, the exhalation, the emptying, the expulsion, and then you bring that in. And then the other one, at a certain part of the alchemical process, you're breathing in, sort of gathering all the qualities, and then allowing them to be dispensed within your being to radiate out. Yeah, so he talked about those different kinds of zikrs. They have different functions, the breath bring about. But anyway, that's all just words, blah, 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 breath.
Could okay. I just like to add one thing, though, in those papers of Hazrat Anayat Khan to Rashida Rabia Martin, he said, you know, when he's writing, you know, la ilaha illallahu.
Yep.
La ilaha illallahu, right? I mean, you know, he was trying to describe that. I don't think he was actually saying, you know, place that there, but that's probably where the
motion
of the, and plus the spine, you know, we're working with energy in the spine too, so thank you.
You know, it's very true, and the fact is that Pir Murshid Hidayat makes a great distinction about these different forms of zikr, and in the traditional zikr that, you know, he received and was passed through at least the Sufi movement lineage, you know, the zikr is done sitting, and the rotation, we visualize an inverted cone. The base of the spine is the point of that, and with the crown, we're drawing this circle of light, and it always ends here. The throne here, the heart, you know, the soul. So we're making this motion, and at the yogic level, of course, this is stimulating the spinal fluid. It's a very wonderful yoga as well. It changes the consciousness. And you're just to do that, you might want to try it. Just starting at the left and sweeping in front of the body. Again, you notice it's the motion. And then releasing. And sweeping. La ilaha illallahu. La ilaha illallahu. La ilaha illallahu. La ilaha illallahu. Alikar, can you sit up on the front of your chair a little more and make your whole spine move, not just your upper body? Scooch forward on your chair a little bit. Yeah, scooch forward. Yes, yes, yes. Can you get us going on the Anayat Kamsa? Can you get us going on the Anayat Kamsa? Murshid asked the question, what use is religion, philosophy, mysticism, or whatever you call it, if it does not produce in you that spirit, that inclination which is divine? And if that inclination and that spirit show in anything, it shows manifestation in divine manner, neither in the graciousness of a king nor in the subservience of a slave will you find that dignity and that humility which divine manner gives. A flower proves to be genuine by its fragrance. A jewel proves to be genuine by its radiance. A fruit proves to be genuine by its sweetness. A soul proves to be genuine by its manner. It is not a thing, therefore, to disregard. This is something to take notice of. All studies and practices, silences and meditations aside, this is the main thing to express God in all one does, especially in the manner that one has towards another. And just one last thing. Because I think it's easy for us to do this when we're feeling good about someone or we're at ease with someone, but what about when we're not? So I'll share a little story with you. Some of you know it, so I'm sorry to repeat myself, but I think it's pretty profound. When I went to my Rinpoche, Comte Rinpoche, he's the lineage holder for the fifth Dalai Lama's teachings, very esoteric teachings on Dzogchen, and he's His Holiness the Dalai Lama's Dzogchen master, so he's a very special being and very lovely, very so much equanimity and radiance. So I was asking him about the practice of prostrations. And he gave me this very elaborate visualization, which, as you said, Ollie Cotter, sometimes really helps to ground the practice or root it to have something that one is concentrating on with the mind. And so he was talking about, you visualize your mother and your father near you and all of your relatives and friends, and then behind them are all of nature and all of creation, and around you are these beautiful landscapes with rolling hills, lush and green, and from all the trees are the most beautiful fruits and gems, and everything's sparkling, and you know, just this elaborate, most beautiful visualization you can ever, you know, otherworldly. You know, all of the space is filled with all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, and you're functioning as the chant master, leading all of creation in your prayer. But you place before you your enemies, and you prostrate to them. Well, that kind of breaks it, doesn't it, a little bit? And, you know, I'm thinking, really? You know, it can't be an amazing Buddha or Tara or something. I said, Rinpoche, I'm a little bit confused by all of this, you know. And he said, well, Nuria, it's very clear. Of course, we work through a translator, but the energy of his speech comes through and his eyes tell me everything. It's very simple. All of this doesn't help you practice the Dharma. It's your enemies that give you the opportunity to practice the Dharma. And they are the greatest teachers. And so, in this same way, we express the divine manner, even if we think another person doesn't deserve that. We don't want to give it. I mean, I think it's okay, you know, to reserve yourself. But it's pretty amazing if you try it and see what happens. Yes. Gem.
And that practice is how you turn a thorn into a rose.
Oh yes, he loves that. That's exactly right. And then the beautiful fragrance comes forward, correct? Yeah. And likewise, of course, when the great master Atisha was invited to go to Tibet, to take the teachings to Tibet from India, he refused a number of times because he thought his work at the university in India was so great. But finally, after one request, he said, yes, fine, I will come. I think it's very good. The Dharma needs to be resurrected in Tibet. So he was assembling his entourage. And he had this tea master that was just really kind of gross. Many of you have heard this too. I mean, he would scratch himself and spit and snort, and he would cuss Atisha, I mean, this great master that everyone revered. And he was from Bengal, you know, and he was like, yeah. And he said, we have to take the Bengali tea master with us. And oh, no one wanted to travel with this guy because he was just such a pissant, you know what I mean? And Atisha said, no. He's so good for me because he's the one that really teaches me, and he gives me the opportunity, and if I'm to falter, you know, then I can see very clearly. I won't be deluded in my practice with this person near me. So if there's someone near you that's producing this feeling, Be assured they're your greatest teacher.
Be assured there's plenty of them around.
Isn't that true? Isn't that true?
The enemy is where?
Everywhere you go, there you are.
Same place as God.
That's right, that's right. Thank you so much for your attention and your patience and your love and contribution. Sorry?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just smelling a lot of smoke.
Yeah. I don't smell it. It may be just wafted in from the fire. O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. If you're suffering, you can be assured of your own self-cherishing. To overcome self-cherishing, serve others. This is the beautiful manner of a Sufi. You've all expressed it so graciously. Thank you so much. Until we meet again at dinner.
Thank you.